3.
Chris, you rolled a 3. That means we will be discussing the question, would you ever replay or rerun a role-playing scene or encounter that didn't go the way you wanted?
Oh, that is a good question. We'll have to talk about it, I guess. I can't just give like, yes.
I guess
all right, end of
podcast. If only we had a venue where we could hash this out.
Yes. Hello, and welcome to Roll for Topic, a roundtable discussion about topics related to running role-playing games. I'm Chris Salzman.
And I'm Andy Rao.
Andy, so you've written this big table of topics recently. I think this is the last one that you wrote, and this is a good one. I like it.
You know, we're giving listeners a look at how the sausage is made, because yes, that's right. Chris just admitted that the die roll was a scam. There was
one
question left on the table, so whatever we rolled.
I did actually roll the die. Okay. We'll put that one on Andy. The roll.
Exactly. It's just the tried and true GMing. Like, doesn't really matter what you roll, because I've decided that you're going to get killed this round. So.
Yes. Yeah.
I had something before we get to our topic. I had something I wanted to bring up that just come up in my GMing lately. But I wanted to ask, have you been reading or watching anything? Kind of our usual question here that's gotten your GM brain rolling at all.
Let's see. Not as much lately, although we watched the first two episodes of Murderbot. So this just came out a couple days ago, I think.
Everyone in my life has recommended those books to me.
Yeah. So I think you should read the first one. I'm sure we've talked about this on the podcast after I read the first one. I enjoyed it. It was good. I did not feel the need to rush out and get all the other books.
Sure.
But I also know many people who their experience with Murderbot was, I'm going to try that. And then they fell down the Murderbot hole and read every single book and novella out there. Yeah. So the first one's a novella, and it seems like the show is going to be following it pretty closely, kind of like beat for beat. So if you try the show and you're like, oh, I'm enjoying this, you will probably enjoy the book. Or if you try the book and you're like, oh, well, you'll probably enjoy the show. But yeah, so that's pretty good. I mean, it's a really fun setup for, you know, like, you know, for a universe, right? You have the titular murder bot, right? Is a security droid who hacks his own governor chip or its own governor chip. I don't know. Like, I'm sure there's going to be a big conversation about, is it a he or an it or whatever. But so it hacks its own governor chip. So it can do whatever it wants, right? So like it has sentience at that point. It's a really interesting setup for it. And it also has to,
and does it like solve crimes? Is this like a mystery series?
I don't know. After the first book, I think I'm not really sure exactly what happens, but it is sort of like an actiony, you know, story. So Murderbot like decides that it needs to, rather than kind of like immediately run off and like go explore space by itself, it decides to just keep on doing its job, but just with its hacked governor module. Okay. Right. So it's kind of pretending that it's still the security unit that's like fully under control of the humans and stuff. But instead he's deciding, like, kind of trying to figure out, like, am I going to protect these people or not?
Yeah.
You know, kind of having some conversations like that. But yeah, it's really good. I think I would recommend you at least try the show, if anything else. Yeah, so that's good. Although I wouldn't say that's really got my GM brain going. I'm still reading The Goldfinch, which I'm about. I was sending you a message about this. My e-reader said that I'm only like 54% of the way done with it, and I was like, I've been reading this for like a month or two. Like, how long is this book? So I finally looked up the page count. I'm like, oh, this is like a 900,000 page, 1,000 page novel that I just sort of accidentally stumbled into. I'm really enjoying it. It is incredible. I've got a lot of thoughts that are, I think, probably pretty spoilery, so I'll leave them off of this. But I will say, like, if you like sort of just like beautiful lyrical writing, it's a really good book, and you'll know pretty quickly, I think, if it's for you or not.
Yeah.
I also have no idea. I mean, we talked about this a couple episodes ago. Like, I don't know where it's going necessarily, so I'm I'm along for the ride. Right.
Well,
now,
that's a great experience. Yeah. Like, that's what you want, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's interesting because, right, like, I think when we think about like GM brain and like consuming media and content, right, whatever, like, you know, you're often like gravitating towards stuff that's like a little bit more action packed and stuff. And like, so this is very much a different style of book than I read like lately, right? So it's a literary fiction, right? So it's just like, you know, it's very much a character study more than anything else. So I'm not getting like great ideas for like combat scenes from it or like like fun little, you know, like, I don't know, like locations you could sprinkle into your adventure. But it is making me think a little bit more deeply, I think probably about like characters and characterization, right? And like what you can, maybe you could do with an NPC. Like there's a couple of characters from it that you could probably pull out and make into an NPC pretty easily. Okay. And then actually, so I just remembered, and I should have remembered this because I just finished it. We just watched it's a Disney movie called Strange World. Have you heard of this?
I have never heard of this. No.
Okay. So I think it came out a couple years ago during the pandemic. I'm not sure exactly what year, but I think it bombed very hard for like a Disney movie.
Okay.
But it was super fun. Like, you know, Disney Pixar, right? So it's like this pulp adventure, like Pixar movie. Like, and it was really fun. Yeah. So it's like this, you know, it starts off with this explorer and his son going on these expeditions, and the explorer is like pushing really hard to like find this new undiscovered country, right? And like in the process, like, you know, they lose him, right? So like, you know, so you immediately got the setup of like, you know, dad is like long lost dad, you know, like off somewhere, right? Yeah. So it's like, it was a really good movie. I enjoyed it quite a bit, and my kids got super into it. Like it had a very very pulp adventure feel to it, where there was a lot of like high action that kind of got resolved in ways that were a little silly, but like still very action-packed. Sure. My kids enjoyed it, like they loved it. Yeah, it was really great. It made me excited to show them like Indiana Jones, you know, a couple years. So,
That's gonna be a wonderful moment. Yes.
That was a
parenting milestone, was watching an Indiana Jones movie with my kids, and then they just were like, oh yeah, that was fine.
Yeah, you know, like, you're like, that was fine. I'd rather watch Temple of Doom right now.
I'm firing up Fortnite now.
Yeah, so. Yes. What about you? Have you been watching or reading anything?
I'll keep this quick. Or whatever. Yeah. One super quick thing. So the e-reader I use. Well, so the Kindle app. I read most of my e-books in Kindle, which maybe there's a better app I should be using, but either due to a bug or a quote feature update. they removed a little while ago the part of the Kindle interface that shows me like my progress through the book, either the percentage or like the page count.
Yeah.
And so now to get that information, I have to like tap the thing and request that information. And it is destroying my brain. I had never thought about how much knowing where I am in a book, like how far through it I am, affects my experience of reading a book. Like I feel like genuinely weirdly disoriented, not being able to tell, like, and you know, when you read a physical book, you have a very tactile sense of how much of the book is left, and it just affects how I slot where I am in the story in like sort of this overarching pace of the book. So I guess maybe there's some RPG things I could pull out of that, but mostly I just wanted to complain about the terrible update today.
Andy's tech complaining is that corner. Yeah, it is very interesting, right? Yeah, like going back to the Goldfinch, like I definitely felt that of like, oh, I had no idea, you know, where I was in this. It was like, you know, surely it's about to wrap up or something like that. But it's like, oh no, there's like a whole, you know, whole half of it ready. But I mean, you think about it in gaming, like I don't know, the current game that I'm playing in, my GM does a really good job with like chapters, right? So like we were playing through like these individual chapters, right? And so like, he's very upfront with like, this is the, you know, we're in this chapter, you know, chapter right now, like we're going to sort of the finale of it, which it's really helpful because I think like with tabletop games, especially if you're playing ones that mechanically have like resources that you're expending, like spells or whatever.
Yeah.
You're hoarding them, right, until the moment where you know, like, can use everything, right? Because you're going to get a big reset or a long rest or something like that. Like, and I think, like, that's a really fun part about the game, of the kind of that ebb and flow of, like, oh, we need to pull back and going to be really careful with our resources, and then the moments where you can just unleash on absolutely everything. Yeah, so a couple sessions ago, we had a really fun, like, final boss, like, for the chapter encounter, and like we spent a lot more time being tactical about like our initial you know, like our initial turn, right? Like how we're going to enter the room than we would have normally. And we were rewarded for that too. But it was like, it was also just one of those things. It was like, well, we knew that door behind that door is the big, the big boss of this.
Sure. Sure.
Of this chapter. Yeah. And I think like having some knowledge of that, like at the table is really helpful.
Yeah. When I think about my own history of gaming, you know, when I was gaming, when I was younger, we weren't playing games that, you know, what we call, quote, like narrative games were a ways off in the future. I mean, caveat here, not that people didn't understand the concepts of a role-playing narrative, but
yeah,
like I didn't pay as GM when I was younger, I didn't pace the games in any deliberate way. Okay. And that a lot of the stuff we were doing was kind of emerged out of random encounters. And so one session might be all about this like incredibly tense, down to the wire, everybody's expended all of their spells and actions and stuff like that, and we barely survived, like this a real end of the movie climactic battle. Mm-hmm. And the next session might just be fine, we mop up a few minor things, but nothing too exciting happens.
Yeah.
And I guess over time that creates its own sort of pace, but you know, when I think now, I've been looking at the second edition Alien RPG, which of course I backed on Kickstarter.
Yeah, of course.
I waited till like the last day, and then I was like, oh, dang it.
I remember that you tried so hard.
And so I tried to make it to the end, and then they're like, we made it and the deadline has passed, but like keep the funding train rolling or something. It's like, no, stop. So anyway. But that is a game where, you know, when I run that game, those published adventures for that are like literally, this is the second act of the adventure. And by the end of this act, these things must have happened to set up, you know. And I have enjoyed that in the Alien RPG. It works well. But I don't know. It's that level of like extremely deliberate plot pacing, like charting out the pacing ups and downs in advance of a game. Mm-hmm. That's something that like it still feels kind of new and strange to me because I really grew up not doing that at all. So sorry for the monologue.
That's good. I mean, it sounds like you still think fondly of both the, you know, the big like kind of epic sessions of your youth, but also the ones where it was like, yeah, just kind of going around doing little stuff, right? Or did you, when you were playing those, did you have a sense of like, oh, I really like this kind of session versus that kind of session? Or was it just like, well, we're playing D&D and like, this is just right. Some days are like this, some days are like that.
Well, I'll say this, like running, say the Alien RPG, which I have, and I've enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. It's very, very satisfying when the pacing works and you reach, and at the, you know, if each act of the adventure can be done in one game night. And so, you know, you end the game night on the perfect movie pacing mark. Yeah. I mean, it feels very good when that all works together.
Yeah.
It does add a lot of pressure. I feel a lot of pressure as the GM to be like, we've only got an hour left. And like, I've got to speed things up here. Or I got to slow things down, or, you know, I need to engineer where we're going to wind up at 10:30 when we stop for the night so that it gives us that good second act of the movie feel. So I would say I don't think one is better than the other. I gravitate a little bit towards the like, let's play some D&D and see what happens, and we'll just stop in 3 hours, whether we just had like the world's most epic fight or we just spent 3 hours like, you know, meandering around this wilderness with nothing very epic happening. So I guess.
Right. It is sort of like, I mean, I think that's why we like to play campaigns, right? It's like, because then you can look back at the campaign and you have these moments, right? Versus it being like, I don't know. Right. It's like, the culmination of all those things kind of makes the campaign, right? And you have those highs and lows and stuff. And I think it's a lot less of like, oh, like that session you ran on May 19th was not as good because we didn't do this, that, or the other thing.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, like the campaign itself was really great. And like, maybe you don't remember the 3 hours wandering around the wilderness or whatever, like you remember the big fight, or maybe there was something about wandering around the wilderness that like really stuck with one of your players, right? Like you don't really know what's going to be the thing that's going to grab.
And it's about people. Player expectation too, right? Yeah. I mean, I think older school D&D type stuff did have more of like a, this is a thing that will feel really satisfying over the long term and maybe a little bit in retrospect.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, a game like Alien, and I don't mean to keep hammering on that, but that one's just fresh on my mind. And it uses that act structure.
Yes, it really
is
does,
much more like, you know, we are here to experience this specific narrative arc, and the how well this goes is going to depend on how closely you adhere to that, you know, that pacing. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, I kind of think about this is going to feel like a big tangent, and it kind of is, but like I'm thinking about like the ways in which we play games, like the physical setting too. I think there's something about that, like, oh, we're just going to get together, play D&D for a couple hours, you know, like, you know, once a month or something like that. And I can almost envision that as like, we're going to go like sit around on couches and play that, right? And there's like, maybe there's a coffee table in front of us, but it's not like we're all sitting down at like the formal dining room table with all of our minis to like play D&D,
yeah,
you know, or something like that. But it's like that setting of like, it's almost like you're hanging out with friends and you're just sort of, you're also playing a game at the same time. Right. Like that's just like a baseline nice thing to do. Right.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's like, yeah, if that environment, right, is really great. I think that's also like, you know, so that's a vibe itself. Right. You know, like there's also the vibe of sitting down at the formal dining table to play. You know, it's like there's just like all these different ways, I think, to approach like the feelings and the sensations and stuff that you get out of like, yeah, playing these games together. Yeah. And I think like I really enjoyed when I played Alien with you, like that act structure was really great.
Yeah.
Right. And like, and it worked super well in that game we played. Yeah. And like, yeah, it was very much like the system was, you know, supporting what it wanted to.
Yeah.
Like that. Yeah. Like, so that was super fun. And it's also not necessarily what I want all the time either. You know, it's like,
sure.
Like you describing like, well, what if we just played D&D where it's just kind of a bunch of random tables and we just sort of saw what happened. Like, that sounds great too. Right. Like,
yeah. Yep. Okay. So, hey, I had another topic I wanted to bring up, but I think I'm going to save it for a future episode. I want to talk about my home Cthulhu game is like running on all cylinders again.
Nice.
And I wanted to talk a little bit about how I pulled that out of the doldrums and got it back to like where, you know, my players are like, when are we playing next? Can we play
that's
tonight?
Fantastic. That sort of thing.
So
yeah,
that's feeling in a good place, but, and I have some thoughts, but I want to save it. I do have one final quick thing, and we don't have to have a big discussion about this, but do you watch the show Poker Face?
I watched most of the first season and loved it. Yeah.
Okay. So the second season is out, or it's in the, it's parts of it are out. They're releasing it and whatever. I'm sure it makes sense to the stakeholders of the streaming service.
Yeah.
So I just want to know, since you and I are very fond of like of Brindlewood Bay and some other games that that really pull together that kind of investigate, they have a structure for a satisfying investigation or mystery solving. Mm-hmm. And so one thing Poker Face does, which I think it's emulating shows like Columbo and other other detective shows, is the first chunk of each episode is it's the crime that will need to be solved in the second part of the episode. And I've been kind of laughing because in season two so far, I feel like this is just my impression that the showmakers have way more fun with like figuring out how the crimes will be done.
Yeah.
And then they get to the end and they're like, oh, whew, we've got to have some, now we got to solve this. And like, so that kind of gets like, that gets like secondary amount of attention. And so that just made me think, because my mind goes to Brindlewood Bay every time I watch that show.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of like a mystery game like that, where the first half of game night is committing the crime in a clever, in a clever way? Because in Poker Face, the crimes, like, they require clever, you know, problem solving.
Yes.
Right.
They do.
That's the crimes are all very cleverly done by people that are, you know, trying really hard to do it in a smart way. That's almost more fun than like the solving of it. So it just made me wonder, like, would that be fun to like play whatever, a mystery RPG where you spend an hour committing the crime as a group and then you switched over? I don't know how this would work. I mean,
yeah,
this, I don't know how this would work, but I have never seen this done. So There's my idea I'm throwing out into the void.
That is a fantastic idea. I mean, yeah, listeners, please, if you know of a system that does that in some way, I think I would be fascinated to hear. I mean, I feel like it's got to exist.
Yeah, what if like one group of players commits the crime and then your a second group of players has to solve it?
There's got to be. And like now I'm wondering if you could do it kind of like a werewolf mechanic, right? Where it's like you somehow have everybody at the table and like whatever. I don't know how you would do this, right? Like, and you have like the perpetrators wake up and like go to a separate room, right? And like do the crime or whatever, and then everybody comes back to the table. And so you're like trying not to reveal that you know, like you're the one who did it.
Yeah.
You know, and like hampering the investigation. It's a good enough idea. I hope someone has done it. If not, someone please steal it and figure out a way to do it. Like that would be really fun. Cause I'm with you, right? It's like, yeah, that is always the best part about crime shows is like the, how do they do it?
I could see a group of players figuring out how to commit this clever, unsolvable crime and then being challenged with like, so where are the holes in your plot that didn't occur to you?
Yeah.
Because we had the timer running, you know, we had a timer running and you had to get it done. So where are the plot holes that like now that the detective is going to pick up on? So.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Well, idea. You know, yeah. We've spent more time talking about our pre-show stuff here than the actual topic. Yeah, so let's jump right into it, Chris. Yeah. Just to recap, the question here is, would you ever replay a role-playing scene or encounter that didn't go the way you wanted? And I guess by you here, I mean the GM, since we are ostensibly a show for GMs, right?
Yes. Yeah, this is a super good question. My mind immediately went to Baldur's Gate 3 and save scumming in that game.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, and where that is, I almost would say that it's encouraged in that game a bit of like, you have this encounter, you kind of save beforehand, try it, fail, come up with a different route, you know, to go through. Mm-hmm. That's very much from the player side of things, I think. And that is some amount of fun. I think it would be tedious to do at the table, you know, as a player to, yeah, be allowed to sort of reset and retry. Although again, probably there's a way to make it fun, but yeah, on the GM side, there are definitely encounters that I've run, specifically like boss encounters where I'm like, wow, I could have done that way better if I got a second try. Like, you know, seeing sort of how the players kind of broke the environment or whatnot, or like, you know, read what was happening in the room too well. So like all my clever traps didn't go off. Yeah. To the point where like, yes, it would be fun to get another shot at some of those, I think. Yeah. I don't know if I'd ever like want to intentionally like, yeah, lift the whole thing wholesale and be like, okay, now we're going to, I don't know. Right. Like there's one fight in particular I'm thinking about that was against like this like Spider Queen, you know, person. I think it was like a wizard riding a spider or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it just didn't quite work well. Like I think my positioning in there didn't work well. It's like the wizard got like one turn and they, you know, beat them and stuff. Yeah. And it's like if I got another chance at that, I would have been more strategic yep. about it. So like maybe I'll run that exact same scenario again sometime. But it's not like I don't have like a laundry list of like, oh, these are the ones I really want to try, give it a second shot. Yeah. What about you?
When I jotted down this question, I kind of had three scenarios in mind.
Mm-hmm.
One is that video game, the players all got killed or the fight cost them so much that they're just devastated, you know, like they planned it poorly or they got bad rolls or whatever. Like, would you ever let them take a retry on like a big boss fight? You know,
interesting. Okay.
Like in a game like Baldur's Gate 3, part of the challenge is not just beating it, but how efficiently can you beat it? Right. Because I mean, if in that game you use up all your healing potions and all your spell slots and stuff like that to get through a combat encounter. I mean, yeah, you can keep going, but I have absolutely reloaded the game. Sometimes, you know, I can do better than that. I can be smarter than that and not have to spend all the money and time to like recover from this and just reload it. So that's like the video game thing. I've also seen, I've never seen this come up in person, but I've seen some advice, you know, when it talks about safety in gaming, and there's some of the safety mechanics out there have a kind of mechanic where you can kind of rewind and redo something that didn't go quite right. Right.
Yeah.
So I think this is intended to be like something happened that we're all just that either one player or maybe the whole table's a little uncomfortable with how the scene went. Yeah. So, and I've read that advice, and that seems like something that's like easy to suggest that you do, but hard to picture what that would be like, you know, at the game table. You know, what would I've never done that. What would it be like to be, you know, I feel a little uncomfortable with how this courtroom scene went. So let's just go back to the beginning. You're all walking into the courtroom and we'll take the scene from the start. You know, that's interesting to me, partly because I haven't done it and it's kind of hard to picture myself doing that. And then like the third scenario is maybe related, you know, like what if you as a GM just kind of screw up an encounter, right? Like if it's a big fight and the boss is killed easily because you forgot that it had, that it was had resistance against magic or whatever, or something like that. And it trivializes this fight. And then it wasn't really, you know, and it kind of spoiled it for you. Would you ever be like, I forgot that he has shield and would not have been hurt by any of your spells. Like, can we redo this? So those are the very different scenarios I imagined when I wrote this, but for all of the ways I can imagine that you might want to do it, never once in my gaming career as a GM have I ever redone a scene for any of those reasons. So
really, okay.
what do you think about all that?
Yeah, I am pretty sure I have done like a quick rewind on a, based on a content thing before, for a player, player or even myself, like just being like, actually, no, I don't want that. So we'll just kind of go back two sentences. But yeah, like I don't think I've never done like a this whole thing went wrong. Like let's start over. I think that would feel hard to do at the table, mostly because of a kind of narrative momentum. I think it would feel odd. Like again, like going back to video games, like, you know, it wouldn't bother you at all to do it in a video game. But yeah, but at the table, like you've sort of like played out reality and then you're stopping and saying like, oh, that didn't wouldn't quite like that. Like, let's go back and try it again. I think that would be not very satisfying, I think, as a GM to to do the whole thing over again. Like even if you screwed up like the encounter, it's sort of like, I don't know, like you learn something about that and maybe, you know, you do better the next time. It'd be harder, I think, if it was like the final boss fight, right? And it was like it was triply easy or something like that. And it's like you're not gonna get another chance to. I think like if it was a scenario where like the players were really dissatisfied, I think I'd want to give them a way to redeem themselves, but I think I'd want to do it within the story somehow. So I'm thinking about like, so if they went in, there was a total party kill or something like that, you know, against something, it's like, well, okay, maybe you, I don't know. Maybe you're woken up by some god who makes a, you know, some deal with you. You can go back, you have to do something else, and then you can retry this thing, or there's some sort of, you know, time warp that, you know, brings you back, like trying to weave it in narratively. Versus just being like, oh, that wasn't great. Let's try that again. Like, you know, take two on it. I think that would, the take two would be pretty dissatisfying if there wasn't sort of a reason why narratively you could go back and try it again.
There's just this ambient encouragement across almost every role-playing game I've seen to roll with events as they play out at the table, good or bad. And, you know, it's clearly expressed in, you know, ideas like always be yes anding your players, right? Like just don't be phased by whatever's going on. Roll with it. You know, it goes back to rolling on random tables in the early days of gaming. And it comes up to like more narrative games now where, you know, the players throw you something that's that you don't think is going to work. Well, find, you know, find a way to keep things rolling and introduce consequences to sort of balance it out. I don't play in too many games I'm usually running. I don't run or play games generally where there's a real high risk of death, but I think from time to time of this Dark Sun campaign I was playing in maybe a decade ago. It was a great campaign. My character was killed in a big battle at one point, and the GM did the right thing to do, which is that I was bummed that my character was dead. I had invested a lot of time in the campaign in this character, and you know, this character was pursuing goals and stuff that were now just shut down. And yes, I could re-roll a new character, but I was feeling a little down. So the GM did what I think is the right thing to do, which is it made sense in his campaign for us to be able to the party to kind of go into the underworld and bring my character back.
Yeah.
And that was really neat. Mm-hmm. It also took a couple of sessions to play out. And I do remember thinking, you know, you could have just said you actually survived.
Yeah.
Or let's just like quick redo that because you were killed by that fluke roll at the end of combat. Let's just like rewind two combat rounds and try again. And that would have felt like a cheat to me. You know, it also would have missed the opportunity to go on that cool side adventure. It also would have saved maybe 12 hours of yes. time, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not saying, I think he did the thing I would normally suggest mm-hmm. that the GMs do. You roll with it. And to the extent that you want to like undo what happened, you roll it into the plot somehow.
Mm-hmm.
But, right?
Yeah.
12 hours of game, well, you know, I mean, multiple, a month or two of game nights. That's yeah. a lot.
Well, so let me push back on that a little bit. Like, you know, so you're saying, you know, like 12 hours and I don't know if you said the word wasted necessarily, but like there is kind of that undercurrent of like totally wasted. Like Andy, why can't you just roll up a new character? And just like, you know, just call it like, I don't know what your character's name was, you know, like just, yeah, slight variation on it. It's the same thing, right? But I mean, right, like when I hear you talk about that campaign, I've heard you talk about that, you know, for years, like that's the thing that sticks out to you. I've never heard anything else about that campaign. Yeah. Right.
I honestly don't remember anything else.
Yeah, like, right.
Yeah. So yeah, we're talking about a GM triumph, I guess.
Yeah, it's like it's an absolute GM triumph. And I bet you if you polled the other players, they would remember that time that like both like I can't believe Andy got killed. by that dumb thing, but also like, oh, but then we got to go to the underworld and like,
yeah,
you know, revive them. And it's like that's a cool moment that, right, again, like we talk about this a lot on this podcast, like it would not have happened if yeah there wasn't that yes ending of like kind of yeah. the narrative and kind of seeing what could happen there, you know. It's like, and I mean, I'm sure your GM was playing a little bit like, you know, Calvin Ball with the rules too about like, you know, resurrection and stuff,
for sure,
right?
yeah
but I mean it sticks out to you, right? And it's like, yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, I think that's like thinking about that circumstance, like that gives me motivation to be like, okay, well, that didn't go well. Like, how is there a way to, how can you redeem this in the narrative? I mean, like, right. Just like, you know, players can get, you know, characters can get resurrected. Like, I mean, why can't you get, you know, like, why couldn't one of the big bads get resurrected? Right. And you kind of get like a round round two with them,
yeah.
where it's much harder this time.
Yeah, just to be clear, I agree with you.
yeah.
Have you ever been tempted to do this, or has it just never even occurred to you to do this? Or
I think I don't love tactical combat enough to really get overly disappointed if like something doesn't go right with like the mechanics of you know, of an encounter. Yeah, so I mean, maybe that's on me, right? I think like it might be also me kind of like guarding my heart against you know, my best laid plans getting waylaid by by the clever players too. But yeah, so I mean, I think like, yeah, I don't really have that sense. I mean, I am pretty critical of myself and my GMing. Like, so I often will, you know, get done with a session, or you know, like these days, right? Like, you know, we're also recording, you know, me GMing here and there, right, for the podcast too, right? So it's like, talk about like having to like really examine what you're doing at the table. But it's like, yeah, like, you know, so I'll have moments where I'm like, oh, I could have done that better, or like, yeah, oh, I really wish I had, you know, structured this in a slightly different way, you know. But I try to take that more as like a for next time, like I will change it for next time. This also made me think about, there was the Adventure Zone podcast. There was, I don't even remember what the circumstances were, but I was listening to one of their recap episodes once, and they mentioned that there was only like one scene that they've done in, I think like the first arc, the first campaign that they published, where they actually stopped and like redid a scene. Cause they just, they all got to the end of it. GM players there afterwards, they were just like, that didn't feel true to the story that they were telling. Right. They went back and redid it. You know, and that's one of those things where that's sort of like they've got to do that because, you know, they're, you know, doing a podcast, right? And they really want the story to sort of go where they want. But it has stuck out to me as like, that's a really interesting choice. Cause like, again, like, I don't know if I would do that at the table, you know, if it wasn't a recorded thing that was going out. Like, maybe it's just like, oh, that was kind of weird. Like, maybe let's not dwell on that anymore. But I mean, it was also cool to hear them say that, like, this wasn't in keeping with the sort of game that they wanted to play.
Yeah.
The game and the story that they wanted to play. So they very purposely made the decision to, like, let's go back and change that. Yeah, and it is a good reminder. It's like, none of this is set in stone either. Like, if you get halfway into the campaign, you're like, this character is not what I want it to be, like, change it. Like, it's
yeah,
fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioning that, you know, tactical combat is not your the thing you're really here for.
Mm-hmm.
I think that rings for me as well, in the sense that role playing is kind of weird in that I enjoy the overall experience of a role playing game. I don't put load bearing weight on any one piece of, like, a typical game night.
Mm-hmm.
So I do not show up to a game night needing a fight to be really awesome,
mm-hmm.
or needing a particular scene of role playing to go really well. I want everything to go well, but any one of those scenes not being an incredible experience in and of itself is totally fine to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at the end of the day, I enjoy the overall experience of getting together with friends and using these rules to tell the story. And of course, I want as many of those individual components of the game, the inter-party banter, the role-playing, the travel, the combat, the exploration. I want those all to be fun in and of themselves, but none of them are so fun that if, like, it was a little boring one time, I would feel obliged to say, let's redo that. You know,
yeah.
I enjoy a good fight, but combat is not so fun that I would want to do it again. Right? Like,
yes. Yeah.
You know, it's not so fun in and of itself, nor is it so important to me that it be that every fight go well. So, you know, over time, if stuff was just consistently misfiring, that would be a problem. But, like, my joy doesn't come from a scene going exactly right. And if it did, that to me, that would be like a yellow flag of, like, maybe I should be playing a board game instead or something else. Right.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, I think that it's very wise, right? Like, I think that's super good advice too, of, like, yeah, kind of, it doesn't have to be a single thing going right. Like, right, it's like kind of the totality of the experience. So that's good. I like it.
All right, so hey, I think we're coming up on our time here.
Yeah.
So did you have any final thoughts on this topic, or?
Yeah, the only final thought I had, and this is something that I don't have a grand conclusion to draw from it, but just thinking about like playing with my kids, right? So I've got two kids under the age of 10. So when you play with kids, there is a constant, like, renegotiation of the rules of the game that you're playing at all times, including they will say, like, oh, like, let's do that again, but, like, this time it's a whatever, right? Like, there's a new rule. Oftentimes it's like to maximize them winning, right? It's like usually sort of how they're thinking about it. But it is just like, it's just like very pure joy in the, like, the play aspect of it as well. Yeah, like, I was playing a game with my son this, like, tonight before bed, and he was like, oh, well, I'm gonna be a mouse. I'm gonna go get the cheese, and you're also a mouse, and if you catch me, like, right, like, I have to restart or something like that. Something like that. But it was just like, it just came out of nowhere, right? It was just like, oh, like, I'm just gonna invent this thing. And as a parent, you just sort of, like, you just yes and, right? Like, you don't right? Like, you just kind of go with it, and it's like, oh, this is great. Okay, well, you tell me what to do. And like that sort of experience, like, I don't think that tabletop games are trying to, I don't think there's an element of it, like, yes, it should be like a childlike wonder, but I don't think you need to be, like, childlike about it, right, necessarily. Like, right, like, it's okay to be more adult about it, but there is something to how kids play that I think is really joyful that you can probably draw into your game. But yeah, again, I don't have a big you know, like, a big statement about that.
And, you know, like, kids are, like, the one type of gamer that I bet would explore the same dungeon, like, 10 times in a row.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
With, like, no changes whatsoever.
They love it. Yeah, they get super excited about, like, remember Room Tunes, where the goblins, you know, the goblins show up and they do their funny dance, and it's like they do the dance along with the goblins and, like, yeah, whatever. Yeah, it's just, it's fun. Yeah.
So I think our advice here is become a child.
You know, the advice here is come play with my children so I can take a break. Yeah. All right. Well, I think that does it.
Well, good.
For us.
Hey, thanks for chatting chatting about that with me, Chris. So
yeah,
that was fun.
That was good. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, we have been Roll for Topic. We're part of the Roll for It podcasting media network. Our sister show, The Splat Book, is great. They are about to go on a little bit of a hiatus, I think until July. So if you're listening to this as it comes out, they might not be publishing right now, but there is a big back catalog you can go listen to. I just listened to their last episode before that hiatus where they rolled up three different characters in three OSR systems. It was really interesting to me, and I think it would be to you. If you listen to this whole podcast, it'd probably also be interesting to you. Like, they actually went and like made characters in each of these, and they kind of talked about like the differences in the systems. So yeah, it was really good. Definitely go listen to it at thesplatbook.com.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And you can also listen to Andy and John Corey on Zombie Strains. They have managed to convince me to finally watch one of the movies that they reviewed. I have found a copy of Abbott and Costello's Meet Frankenstein. Yeah. I was going to say Meet the Monsters. I don't know if you talked about this in the episode or not, but like there's a ton of these Abbott and Costello meet random, like,
yes,
yeah, be random, like, yeah, Universal Studios like monster of the week sort of people. But so I'm actually gonna go watch, I think, probably my first Abbott and Costello movie maybe ever, based on your recommendation.
Well, hey, that's yeah. Lovely. It's a different era film, you know. So Abbott and Costello are like the actor names, not the character names. So
yeah, I know.
Can you imagine if, like, wouldn't it be fun if it was just if movies these days were like Tom Cruise meets the werewolf, like,
yes,
Tom Cruise meets like the rogue AI, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah,
that's my $1 million idea. Let's go back to these 1940s style movie titles and premises.
I mean, like, no one knows who the guy in Mission Impossible is actually named. It's Tom Cruise right here. Yeah.
All right, well, cool.
Yeah, anyway, well, before I try to figure out what that name is, let's wrap it up. So
I unfortunately know the name, but I shouldn't, so I'm not even gonna say it.
Oh no, it's Ethan something, right?
Is it Ethan Hunt?
That
I
want to
say
right.
Ethan Hawke, but that's an actor.
No, that's an actual. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, everybody go IMDb.
Yes. Yeah. Of course. It's real important, because if there's one thing that's true about the recent Mission Impossible movies, it's like, you know, the plot is just perfection of intricate.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. You're not there to watch Tom Cruise jump off a mountain on a motorcycle.
Yeah,
you are.
Yeah,
there.
No, I'm here for the plot. Yeah. Cool.
I mean, but right. Why isn't that movie called Tom Cruise Jumps Off a Mountain, right? I mean, in the 40s, they would have called it Tom Cruise Jumps Off a Mountain.
So. Yeah, like, I agree. I think that is actually a much better title. All right. Well, that does it for us. I've been Chris Alsman.
I've been Andy Rowe.
And remember, if your players are having fun, you're a great GM.